I'd like to call the special meeting of the Board of Directors to order. Can you take roll, please, Carol?
President Graves?
Here.
Vice President Simon? Director Dawson?
Here.
Director Steele? Director Tatro?
Here.
Mr. General Manager, do you have any changes to tonight's special meeting agenda?
Yes. There was a possible potential need for a closed session with respect to a previous action that the board had taken. That subject has resolved itself, and there is no further need at this point to have a closed session this evening.
Thank you. Time for public comments. Are there any public comments with regards to things that are on this agenda? Very well. We have one thing on this session, and that is Section C on the consent calendar.
I make a motion to pass the consent calendar.
Well, sure you can.
I'll second.
Give me a mic second there, Ray. We're recording this thing. Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion by the board for explanation purposes to those that are out there? This is just a move of Veolia into a month-to-month because of the extensive procedure that we've gone through to interview and determine who's going to be going forward as our contractor. We are not going to be able to complete that by the end of the year, so we're moving it together on a month-to-month. Any discussion from the public? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. I will now move to adjourn at this point.
Yes.
I would now move to we will now adjourn this special meeting. Thank you.
That was easy.
And we don't have to go stand in the cold and wait for the meeting.
No.
I know. Yay. Yeah.
Nice holidays.
Thank you very much.
See you later.
You'll have dinner with my wife.
You just missed it. Special meeting.
What?
Closed session.
You misread.
Yes, sir.
7 o'clock here, man.
Y'all, please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Carol, will you call the roll, please?
President Graves?
Still here.
Vice President Simon?
Here.
Director Dawson?
Here.
Director Steele? Director Tatro?
Here.
Okay. That's all I know by memory. Now I got to open the book. This is our time for public comments. Is there anybody from the audience that would like to make a comment on items that are not on the agenda?
I just have a question. I came up after the last meeting and asked you, Kevin,
yes,
when the swearing in was going to be, and you said in January, and the next thing I know, the board's sworn in, and we weren't notified. We're always notified via email. Was it a private thing? Was it an invitation only? Has it been done? Where are we and what's happening? To tell you the truth, I have my feelings hurt that you guys didn't allow us to come and be part of that. So when you get to the director's comments, feel free to answer it then. Thank you.
Well, actually, I can address that right now. Thanks for that. The CSD law states that new directors have to be sworn in at a specific time on a specific day, and that was only, we only became aware of that at the very last minute. There will be a swearing-in ceremony for the public's benefit on the January meeting, where all three directors will be sworn in to office more or less ceremoniously because they had been sworn in prior to that, but it wasn't meant to be private or anything, but it's not something that has to be agendized either. But there is a law that states that the new directors have to be sworn in on the first Friday of the month at 12 noon, believe it or not.
How could that never happen before?
That's a question I can't answer, but I can just tell you what it is now.
No, it never happened before.
It never had happened before.
I agree. It didn't happen with me. Well, I was appointed though, so.
But you are going to have a ceremony?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Just a point of, am I on? Just a point of clarification.
Yes, sir.
The swearing in is not required to be on that date. It is at that date and that time, they then assume office subject to taking the oath. Many of the oaths are done by a notary, which is required by state law, and they literally can go into somebody's, you know, notary office and have it done then. But many of them do follow up with either a ceremonial one that is just strictly ceremonial, or they'll have a notary come to a meeting and then formally do it at the meeting that way.
Okay.
And actually, that's kind of pretty much what happened. Carol McCool is a notary, and so Chris just came in here, and I don't think it was anything, but staff was here at the time. I wasn't able to make it. I can't take off work for a volunteer.
I just didn't want to get left out of the party.
Yeah, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Maybe we can get Rick to bring cookies again, too.
We're definitely having a party. We'll box up those cookies left over. We'll hold them out for you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Any other comments? Yes, sir.
Hi. I may not have been in the room at the right time, but there was a closed session. And the practice, I think, has been to announce the results of the closed session.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Don, but actually the closed session was not, there was not a closed session tonight. There was not a need for it. There was a possibility there would be because of a situation with the employment, with the benefit package. And we might, there was a possibility we would have to go another direction with it, but we found out today we don't. So the closed session was actually canceled. There was a special session meeting, but it was only to extend Violi's contract to a month-to-month contract. So, because you weren't here, yeah, actually the closed session did not occur, and it was announced ahead of time that it wasn't going to occur.
I got you. In the special session to go the month-to-month Violi, was that approved?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. What I really wanted to ask about, though, is back on Wednesday, the 17th of November, the district announced a long-standing process that was in place to provide a citizen with records immediately upon receipt by the board. That was based on a public records request, according to the district, that Bob Mankin submitted to one of the directors. This process that I was completely unaware of is in direct opposition to the district's policy for handling and publicizing public records requests. The board at the time gave no indication, nor have they subsequently, and I have asked, they gave no indication as to why board members themselves would enjoy a different responsibility from those of staff members with regard to public records requests. I know that we have a process in place that's intended to track requests and time associated with those requests. I believe it's because there was concern that people were abusing the requests, and I think it's completely unfair to handle requests differently because of political alliances. And that's what's happening, it seems. So I'm asking the district to take a position on this, and I've talked with people in front of me and haven't made much headway, but I would like the district to take a position more or less saying that you have a policy and that you'll ensure that the policy is either followed consistently by all district personnel or work toward changing the policy. Now, I don't think anybody that's sitting up here right now believes that what was happening should happen, but that's not really my point. My point is that the district was doing it, and the district needs to take a stance and either support what the district was doing, which I doubt you will, or say that it's wrong and ensure that it doesn't happen again. And I'm not asking for a new policy, because remember, there's already a policy in place. And, you know, this has been reported in the local media, and people have been made out to be villains for requesting documents. I think it's kind of sad that some people that request documents do it behind the scenes without formal requests that are noted and reported on. And I think that you guys should take that seriously. Thanks.
Mr. Mason.
I can just offer a little bit of clarification since I seem to be the subject of conversation there. But my request to Director Pico is just an informal request. David's a friend of mine. And You guys can come up with whatever policy you care to, but I don't believe you can supersede what is state law in terms of public records. So once those are emailed out to all of you on the board, what you do with it beyond that is kind of up to you. I'd be happy to share with you a pamphlet, which is pretty much a template used by the county, all kinds of departments over there in terms of how they handle public records. And it's kind of a cheat sheet in terms of the way you can request. You can do verbal requests, you can do formal written requests, you can do it all kinds of different ways. You can show up at the front door between 8 and 5 and make a request. There's nothing to stop you from doing that. So I don't see if there's anything that was done wrong here. I think there's just an issue that Mr. Flint doesn't like the fact that I had somebody who happened to be on the board at the time and was willing to share a document with me. As long as it's in the public realm, there's no issue. It also came up in a letter from Mr. Richardson, which y'all received yesterday. And I want to be clear, there's a differentiation between documents that are in attorney-client privilege domain and public records, two different things. So I just want to clarify that.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, that'll close public comments. Any presentations this evening, staff?
None this evening that are not on the agenda.
Thank you. I have not much to report today, except that I do want to let y'all know that Farron and Sue and Callista and Sherry and the gals put on a gathering for our vendors at a vendor appreciation luncheon yesterday, and the room was packed with people. Everything from the guys with the orange vests on to the owners of the companies, and it was awesome. We had volunteers from the police department that volunteer for Tony Fontenot. Over here all the time, and it was very successful, and I want to acknowledge that here in public, that it was a good time was had. I believe the entire board was here except for Chris, and I will, just so you guys know, Chris Steele's missing his first meeting, but I want to tell you he's on a trip to Hawaii that he had planned about 8 months ago, and that, I believe that even might have been prior to his decision to run for the seat. So we give him a pass on his first meeting. Anyway, so that has occurred, and then I just want to, since this is the last time we'll meet prior to the holidays, I would just like to wish you all there a very Merry Christmas, Happy Holiday Season, whatever it's appropriate to you, and also to our constituents out in Discovery Bay, and just tell you that it's been an interesting year, and I've enjoyed being in the seat, so thank you. Director's comments. Ray?
None. I got a couple. I attended the board meeting of the Byron Union School District Trustees on December 9th. They elected a new president, who is Elaine Landreau. They also had a amazing goodbye to Carrie Murayama. I've never seen so many flowers in my entire life. They swore in Jeffrey Sugimoto, who's the new board member. So Elaine Landreau is the president. Bobby Nugent is now the vice president. They set meeting times for the year, which is 7 for regular meetings, 5:30 for their closed sessions, and they postponed their board representatives until the first meeting of January. The one thing I want to share from the meeting was the financial outlook of the district over the next 4 years. This year they are going to be $16,000 ahead of operating costs, but after that it becomes more and more drastic, up until 3 years from now being in the, I think it's $750,000 operating in deficit. They have 3%, or the equivalent of 6 days of reserves. So something that we, those of us with children in the school district, may want to pay attention to. One last thing, they did hire 4 new positions that were paid for with one-time federal job aid money. And these positions are to aid the teachers. There's a coach, a mentor, and 2 other positions. They also hired on some new aides for special needs kids. And that's all I have, sir.
Thank you. Moving on now to the consent calendar.
I'll make a motion that we approve the consent calendar.
Second.
Second.
Thank you, gentlemen. The motion's been made and seconded. Is there any discussion upon any items on the consent calendar by the board? Any discussion on any consent items by those in the audience?
5-1.
You missed your chance, sorry. Okay. Oh, no, seriously?
No, I was just going to make a joke.
Okay, that's good. Not hearing any comments, all those in favor of the passing the consent calendar, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. New business. Farron, you're on. Oh, I believe you're on. Sorry, staff,
yes,
you're on.
No,
let's just make it a very general statement.
Yes,
staff, the floor is yours.
Farron is going to, just real brief, I'm just going to just introduce Farron, who we all know. But
no, I'm really sorry. I hate to interrupt you, but I misunderstood what we were talking about there, and I have one comment on the consent calendar.
Well, it's already been passed, but I'll go ahead and allow you to comment, Don.
Well, my comment is that on the consent calendar information that was submitted, it says that the total cost is $300 to $325, and that's patently untrue, since the...
What item are you talking about?
It's E3. That's where I lost track, because it's E3. I was thinking E3, and I'd lost track when we did consent calendar.
Okay, no
sorry
problem.
Sorry about that.
No. Go ahead. I mean, again, it's already been passed.
That's fine. I'll say what I want to say. You guys can do what you want to do.
Okay.
It says amount requested approximately $300 to $325, and that's just not true, because you're talking about stipends for all the directors also. And the stipends actually add up to more by a significant amount than the amount of the dinner that y'all are going to eat. And I think that, first of all, I think it's something that needs to be addressed when you put something before the board and the people and understate the cost and overstate the benefit. And the cost is much more than $325. It doesn't have to be. The directors don't have to claim stipends for going out to dinner. But y'all voted to do that.
Thank you.
Do you want
to comment?
Just real briefly.
Sure, go ahead.
Mr. Flynn is correct. There would be a stipend that would be paid to it. And to be honest with you, I thought long and hard about that, Don, and members of the board. But I was referencing primarily the cost of the event to attend the event. And I indicated in there that there would be a stipend that would be paid. So, yes, it could have included the stipend dollar amount. And so if that's the board's preference in the future to do that, that would be fine. But I was, because I had indicated previously in the report that it would include the stipend, I wanted to make sure that I was referencing primarily the cost of the event, to attend the event, to buy the ticket, if you will.
Understood. And actually, I was not able to attend last year because it was right after I came on. I had prior arrangements. But I believe a stipend was paid last year, and it was common knowledge, and everybody, I mean, it's a standard procedure, correct? Nothing unusual occurring this year?
Not that I'm aware of. I believe it's exactly the same that took place last year.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead with your report, Rick.
Okay, thank you. Farron's been working, as you know, on the Discovery Bay Sandpoint Landscape Project. We've been working real hard with Rec 800 to get that MOU in place a couple months back. And so that just brings you the history to recall the project of where we were and where we are today. And so with that, Farron, why don't you go ahead and come on up and discuss the project and explain what the process was that took place.
Okay, thank you, Rick. This project has been 7 months in the making. Like Rick mentioned, there were some issues with some levy restrictions that we had to work together to figure out a solution to. There was many modifications to designs. We went back and forth with the architect, and then we had a 6-week bid opening. So all of that kind of played part in that. The bid package was released to the public in October, and at the time of release, the corresponding opinion of probable cost was $193,000. During the bid process, the town issued 3 addendums to the package that would have reduced the total package cost significantly. These changes included increased spacing on the larger shrubs, deletion of the soil amendment process that we had originally intended to do, and omission of the topsoil requirement. Both of those last were due to some concerns over erosion on the slope. Those changes had the potential to reduce the package cost to somewhere between $130 and $140. It was not recalculated. We just took it out of the original estimate. We received 6 bids on December 7th. The low bidder was Green Valley Landscape with a total cost of $96,236. This is a very unusually low bid, but they do have a proven track record in our town of successfully completing, performing on low bids, which is, we awarded them also the Willow Lake project. In fact, that bid on the Willow Lake project was about 73% of the estimated probable cost on that. The bid on this one is about 74% of the estimated cost. Their package was complete. Their bonds and paperwork were in order. And again, we had discussions with the owner and they stand behind their bid. They're just trying to keep people working. And one of the things they liked is that we're ready to go on this. So it is our recommendation that we accept the bid and award the contract in the amount of $96,236.
Anything to add to that, Rick?
No, only that this company had probably received, well, the work product that this company did has probably received more positive feedback in town since that project has been completed. And for those of you that aren't familiar with it, it's the project right out on Willow Lake, right out here in front of the school and the church. And you know, when they originally brought their first bid in and we awarded a number of months back for Willow Lake, we had some concerns, and Farron did her due diligence and went through it. I know the went to the board and everything else, and we're just so thrilled that we were able to get that back again, because we know they do good work. They're a relatively local firm. Mm-hmm. They're not a big, large firm, and so their costs are a lot smaller, a lot lower. So okay. We recommend staff recommendation.
Thank you. Obviously, Farron, you are happy with what they've done here previously. I'm not a green thumb, so it looks great to me.
Yeah.
But I know when I remember when those guys were out there working, it was like 105 degrees. Mm. I remember it was like the hottest time of the year, and they were out there working on that sidewalk out there. You're happy with everything they did there?
There's we didn't have any problems. They complied with all of their encroachment requirements. They were a pleasure to work with. I really liked their crew. And actually, it was funny because we did have some change orders on that project, and I was like, oh, this is where we're going to get stuck with it. You know, this is what happens. You contract, and then there's change orders. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't believe that even their change orders were very, very reasonable. I mean, lower than I would have expected even putting it out to bid again. So definitely everything was a plus working with them.
Any questions or comments from the board?
They did a great job. I looked at their work, and I couldn't find anything wrong with it.
No.
Any questions or comments for Farron from the audience? Mark, did you have something?
Just to say that they did a tremendous job. I watched them as well when my kids go there.
You're going back there all the time.
Yeah, you know, I would say the same thing. They did a great job, and more than that, everything Farron's done is great. The entrance to Discovery Bay with the pots,
oh yes,
with the flowers on them, and then Balfour by the gas station, mm-hmm, with the flowers. It's just, it's awesome. It's never been like that before.
Thank you.
And I want to add on to that, and you know, we go about our daily lives and we look at things, and I'm glad you noticed it, because that makes her job so much more valuable. So from my perspective, I appreciate that very much. I know the board does, we hear about it, but from the public to see it and make a comment, we appreciate that.
I'd like to make a motion to accept the lowest responsible bid and award a construction contract for the Discovery Bay Boulevard Sand Point Road Landscape Improvement Project in the amount of $96,236 to Green Valley Landscape.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Farron, for your report, as usual. Well done. Item 2 on the new business action items, staff.
Thank you, Mr. President. This item is before you as a request of the board. The prior meeting, the board requested to bring a consideration of the no cash transaction policy back for consideration, and that's what we're doing this evening. Prior to 2008, we didn't really accept payments for anything other than for park reservation fees, some minor public records requests. And one thing that I didn't add on here that I should have is for the sale of goods and sale of goods, t-shirts, license plate frames, those kinds of things that we sell, not only in here, but we also sell outside at different local events that are taking place within, you know, throughout town. But back in 2008, that kind of all changed. That's when we began metering approximately 1,800 residential and commercial water users. While most of our water users do pay their water utility bills by check, there are still a relatively small number, but not insignificant number of them, that do pay by cash. The last 90 days, as an example, we brought in about $9,800 in cash. $20 of that, $9,848 of that was for water billings, and only $20 was for other items. And as a further example, the gentleman came in this afternoon and paid a water bill that was a number of months late, and he was on a catch-up plan, I guess, and he brought in a lot of $100 bills and paid his water bill. That is atypical, but it does take place on a regular basis. There are pros and cons to accepting cash. Some residents rely solely on cash, cashier's checks, money orders, that sort of thing. Some of the reasons why they want to do that is because of their jobs. Maybe they're waiters, waitresses. They work in a cash business, so it's easier for them just to bring the cash from where they came from. It could be the economy. It could be their job situation, their economic situation. But the fact of the matter is, we do receive a number of residents that do bring in their water bills and pay with cash. Some of the negatives to accepting cash are, one, it is from a safety standpoint for employees. If we, you know, every day the money goes to the bank. It's not that we keep the money; it doesn't sit here in the district office. We collect $10,000 at the end of 90 days. We bring it to the bank. It goes to the bank each and every day. There's cash that's brought in, but there is that safety aspect of it. I personally would prefer that we have as small amount of cash on hand as possible, but then we also have security standpoints with respect to cash handling policies. None of our employees are bonded. I trust them all completely, but that doesn't mean that some things could happen in the future with different people if they were here. But I don't have that concern right now with any of them, but you never know. And then the other thing is, we would spend less time reconciling cash, which is a fairly time consuming because it requires two people to reconcile the cash deposits. You don't want to have one person doing it for the reasons previously stated, but you definitely want to have two people to make sure that it's done appropriately. If we were to move the district and proceed with the no cash transaction policy, we would need to establish credit card processing agreements with the local bank or with a other business services provider, MasterCard, Visa, that sort of thing. And also, I would want to make sure that we turn on the component or that portion of the website, if you will, that allows for online banking. And we are, that's actually was constructed as part of the website, and so that feature's there. It's just not operable because we don't offer credit cards.
Just set up an account for it.
Yep. So on last Thursday, December the 9th, Liz Hardy and I met with a representative of ECC Bank locally here, and gave us a presentation on how the credit card system works. It's a fairly straightforward process. It can be done any number of ways. It can be done so that the district could take on the fee of that. There's a small transaction fee, but governmental agencies are allowed to, by the credit card companies themselves — it's not a law, but it's the credit card companies themselves — they give an exemption. So for example, if you go to pay your property taxes online, you pay what's called a convenience fee. The bank actually gets that convenience fee. They determine what that fee is based on your history, based on the volume and the number of transactions and the dollar amount. So we could either absorb that cost ourselves, 2-4%, or we can have the bank put it in as part of a transaction fee, or I'm sorry, a convenience fee, so that we would not pay any fee to the bank, and we would just get the exact deposit, whatever the water bill was. If it's $100, for example, instead of getting $96, it was 4%. We get $100 in the bank, we get $4, and the customer, the consumer, pays that transaction there, or that convenience fee. It's not uncommon. If we were to move in that direction, one of the things I would recommend is that we implement it across all boards with respect to all business transactions. And I would give the one exception that if we are out and about and we're selling t-shirts and license plate frames at a chamber event, we would have a handheld device to be able to accept credit cards, but we would also accept cash there, right, or hand out a receipt and go to the bank. So that would be the only exception I could see to that.
Rick, what would the time frame to set up the credit card billing be?
The time frame to set that up is very short. He indicated that if we were to select ECC Bank as an example, who we do our banking, who our business relationship is with, we could have it up and running probably within 10 to 15 days. And we could roll that out really quickly. That's not the problem. The problem is notifying those residents that currently pay cash and like to come in and pay cash that we're no longer going to accept cash. And I would recommend a minimum of 4 months there, because we do our water billing on a monthly basis for residential, quarterly for commercial large and large users. So that while we don't get any cash for large users and commercial, they all pay by check. There's the possibility that some company could come in and just pay cash is absolutely there, and so we want to give them enough notice as possible. So I would want to go through a full quarter cycle with them. To make sure that takes place, and I just selected May 1st as a rollout date as a date to cease accepting cash, but we could roll out the credit card transaction component of it within the next few weeks. Within a few weeks of coming back and getting agreements with the bank approved by the board, which leads me to. I came up with three different options before the board, and there might certainly be more out there. But the first option would be to do nothing, leave everything as it is in place, and continue to accept cash and checks, but not migrate to the credit card business transaction services. No further board action would be necessary if we went in that direction. The second option that I listed here would be to leave the current cash collection procedures in place, but to implement the credit debit card and online bill pay. If we did that, then I would have to come back with those agreements to roll that out. And then the third option would be to eliminate all cash, implement the credit debit card options, and then also implement the online bill pay. And if we did that, staff would have to come back with a no cash transaction policy. That would include a rollout period or a period of time that we would notify the public that cash was no longer accepted, and that we would also bring back to you the agreements with the bank or business transaction company, as well as the online bill pay component. There's a component of that we would have to work with as well with another company. So there's two different companies we'd have to work with to get that rolled out. So. Before you tonight, there's three different options the board could consider. Any variation thereof is fine, but from a personal standpoint, from a staff standpoint, I was pretty uncomfortable this afternoon when a gentleman came in and rolled out literally a wad of $100 bills. And that's something I really wouldn't want to see on a regular basis. While they went right to the bank with it, you know, they did the right thing, and the bank isn't too far away. You know, if people knew that we were accepting cash here, we could be the target. And while we're fairly safe back here and we're down the street from the church, I think those are pretty unlikely. But I'm more concerned about the fact that our employees aren't bonded, and we do have, and that it is just a safer environment from a financial transaction standpoint.
You know, one of the issues here, and you just said it yourself, they paid with a lot of hundreds today, and then the employees took it to the bank. The fact that you're taking, we're short staffed to begin with, and the fact that you're taking employees out of here during working hours that have to run to the bank to put cash in is exactly the reason why we should go to no cash. There's no reason to take cash. To have employees here that are responsible for reconciling money that they shouldn't have to, or keeping a bank I think it was a waste of time.
They didn't go right. They didn't stop what they were doing and go right then and there. But at the end of the day, when the cash was all counted up, it was all put in place.
Well, the point is they do it every day. That's the point. Every day,
the day that
somebody has to go down there.
When we receive cash, we don't receive cash every day. It's typically after the first of the month, and then at the end of the month, things slow way down. Oh, okay. Then it kicks in again, you know, pretty solidly.
And then, as you said, you take two employees to count it. So one employee stops doing what that person is doing and goes to help the other person count. So to me, is every reason in the world to just be done with this. There's no reason to have to accept cash. People that pay by cash can go over to a CVS pharmacy or the post office and get a money order and bring it in. It's inexpensive. Or they can pay by credit card or pay by personal check. Most people have a checking account.
Yeah, it can be credit card, debit card, online bill pay. We do get a lot of our, people in today's day and age, and here in Discovery Bay are very computer savvy, obviously. And we do get a fair number of our payments directly from the bank. You know, people pay online through their bank bill pay systems. We get a lot of those. But we do get a lot of people coming in every day and paying.
Thank you, staff. Brian?
One of the things I was concerned with was how we would notify. Would we be sending out a letter, or would we just put a sign up that says effective May such and such?
No, it would go on your monthly water bills.
Okay.
There would be a statement. We can change the water bills and put in different comments. We can, your payment is past due. Have a happy holiday. Mm-hmm. Have a safe and sane 4th of July. Those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And we would put on there's a note section on the bills themselves. And we can change that to put in anything we want to.
Okay.
And so we would put in there, and we can highlight that in red or in green or whatever to identify that.
I'm glad to see us moving in this direction. I do believe you told me a story about a gentleman who was not pleased with his water bill and decided to pay with pennies. So I think nipping that, in the bud would be a smart idea. And I also like the idea of utilizing the website more in the direction that it was meant to be utilized. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We could also put this on the, I'm sure the press will put an article in there that we're going for cash.
Rick, I have a couple of things. First of all, when I pay my property taxes twice a year, I have an option to pay by electronic check, debit or credit card. If I pay debit or credit card, I pay a convenience fee. If I pay electronic check, it doesn't cost me a penny more to do it that way. So who absorbs that cost? I mean, how can we do this so it's not costing the consumer any more money?
If you throw the check portion out, because there's no cost to do the check through your online bill pay.
Okay. So then we could set the website up to offer electronic check, and then there would be no financial impact to either the town or the customer.
It's an ACH, I forget what the...
Just it's a yes or...
Yeah.
Is the answer...
The only way to have the... It's how you set the account up with the bank. Is how it's set up.
Where I'm going with this is that I don't want to only allow an opportunity for people to pay their bill if it's going to cost them more money to do that, if there's an option to do it another way. In other words, if we can offer the electronic check option to where you enter your check number and your routing number and it goes boom right to their bank and it doesn't cost us anything or the person anything, I think that's important, because that's the exercise I always option. I don't want to pay $4 for using my debit card if I can write down 32 numbers and it doesn't cost me a dime.
Right. Yes, you are right. There's no cost to do the EFT or the
whatever.
Or the ACH.
EFT. Right.
Okay.
Right.
Or the check that you do through your automatic bill pay through your bank. There's no cost to do that. The only cost is involved is when you pull out the piece of plastic and you type those digits into the computer.
But at least that option would be available, and that's what's important to me.
And that option can be set up one of two ways. Either the consumer pays it, the transaction fee, or we absorb that cost.
Yeah, that's something we're going to have to decide.
Well,
I don't think you can pass that on to the consumer. I mean, we're making them do it.
We're offering them a free way to do it.
The check will be fine. If you can do the electronic check, it doesn't cost anything, that's great. But if we make them pay by credit card or by debit, we need to, you can't pass it on to them.
Yes, we can. We should.
If you pay your property tax,
we should take that money on. That's
okay. We're kind of killing this thing. Yeah. I mean,
well, I'll make a motion.
Hold on one second.
Vote me or anything.
Right. Again, I agree with both. I agree that if we have the option to pay for free, then we can charge them to pay by credit card.
That's good. I like that.
And if they choose to use their debit card, because they all have the ability to memorize or write down a routing number and a checking account number. That's all it takes.
I agree with it.
And in fact, most of us probably have that memorized these days because we use it so much. But nonetheless, I would expect that it would be, I don't much, you know, I was thinking 2 to 3 months would be enough time to notify the transition, but because I'm not concerned about the large water users being notified. They don't pay by cash anyway, they pay by check.
But we only bill them quarterly, so we would only have one cycle to notify them. That's
But then they're not paying by cash anyway. But anyway, so and then
I have one more thing.
It should all be set up to go between on the website. That's how it should be handled. And they still more than welcome to drop off a check if they want to, or a cashier's check. I have been contacted by numerous people that say they hate the fact that we don't have that off being offered to them, that they can pay with their debit card. One gal came down here to pay and she didn't have cash and she couldn't believe that we didn't accept it. We are way behind on this thing and we need to move forward with it.
Maybe what we could do is put an informational page on the website that would outline for people who don't know which how to pay
we
through
can
the
work
page.
We can work that out. Ray, did you have a motion?
Yes.
Wait, Council, did you have a comment?
Point of order, you still need to allow for public comment before you take a motion.
Correct. Comment from the public, please.
I have a comment or two. Of course, I think I agree with Director Dawson and really all of you that the website ought to allow for payment by credit card. I think that would be an appropriate starting point. And I think that there's a lot of information that's been provided in the agenda packet, or there's some information in the agenda packet, and some more information that's been provided here orally. This anecdotal, I'm interested to know how many checks or how many $100 bills were delivered today. I heard it was a hand, I think, because if it was $300, and the concern is how much money, that's different than if it was $2,500.
The concern's handling cash. The amount, that's what I started to say when Mark said that. It doesn't matter whether they have to go over to the bank for 18 bucks or 300 bucks. They still have to make the trip to the bank, and they're susceptible when they do that. I'm sorry?
If the details don't matter, they don't matter. But I think if they exist...
That's not what I said. I didn't say the details didn't matter.
It seems like there's $9,800 in 3 months. I assume if we receive checks here in the office, they go to the bank as well. So there's a trip to the bank anyway. That hasn't been clarified tonight. I just feel like there's everybody wants to accept credit cards. I think that's great. I think the more options, the better. I think forcing it on people or forcing these alternatives on people is an overreach right now. I would suggest that you put the process in place that allows for credit cards and allows these electronic payments to happen. And then once it's in place and people start using it, then sit back and look at it and say what we should do as far as a policy to require it. There's no reason not to do that. We haven't required it yet, and we don't even have the thing in place. So just to be cautionary to move forward in that way. Also, I think that you've pulled out an exception for selling T-shirts or small items. I'm going to bring up the public records request. I think that you might have a 16-year-old kid who wants a public record that doesn't have a bank account, and he has a right to get the record.
Go and get a money order.
Well,
his parents have a bank account.
Mom and dad have a bank account.
Mr. Flint, that was.
Well, I just think that the district should be as forthcoming and open about allowing people to obtain public records. I know that you've all voiced concern about anonymous public records requests. And
We're talking about handling cash here at the office, and anonymous. Or not anonymous or anything else has nothing to do with it.
Well, I disagree.
Well, that's okay, but it doesn't, so we won't discuss. Not the subject matter here.
President Graves, you may disagree with me, and I may be wrong, but I think I have a right to say it.
You have a right to comment on the motion that's on the floor, the, on the issue that's on the floor right here, which is the handling of cash, not in, not public records request. That's not the subject that's here right now. If you'd like that put on the agenda, then at the end of the meeting, you can ask to have that put on the agenda, and if one of the directors agrees, it can be.
It seems to me that I am drawing a nexus between anonymous public records requests and a no cash policy, and you're refusing to allow me to talk about that.
You're actually past 3 minutes right now, anyway.
Well, you know what,
Don, you're past 3 minutes now. Okay.
That's where I am. And how much time has been mine, and how much has been yours?
You've been asking questions, we've been answering them.
I haven't asked a single question.
I disagree with that, and I think if you'll go listen to the tape tonight, you'll hear that there's questions been asked. Would you like to sum it up? I will give you the opportunity.
Yeah, I would. You know, I'm not against the idea. I'm really in favor of the idea of allowing the website to do what it should do. What we haven't heard is what the cost will be for the website development. You've said, and I don't believe it, that it's already encompassed in what's there. I'll bet that there's going to be costs associated with that, and nobody's investigated it. I may be wrong. And when I am wrong, I'll step up and say it.
Okay. Thank you, Don. Any other comments from the public? I did entertain a motion.
Wait a minute. I have a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sorry. Okay. I'm trying to figure this out in my head. If I come down to get a public records request and it's for $2, do I have to use my credit card and get charged the $4 fee for that?
Or a check?
No.
You write a check for $2, huh?
Money order?
Go down and get money order for $2. To me, I mean, I think my opinion as a member of the public, the taxpaying public, maybe there should be some delineation made of just paying the water bills, and everything else could be cash. Because I don't think you take in that much money in cash for public records requests, for hats, for t-shirts, or whatever else it is. You're primarily, the big money that you're taking in is water bills. Maybe that's where you ought to focus the cash-only aspect.
Thank you for that. I understand what Ms. Richards is saying, and I just want to comment on this. Here, the situation, what we're really talking about here is not what we're paying for. The only reason that the hats and shirts were brought up because they're done in an outside location where people are in swimsuits and may not have this, and it's more of a public environment. But the point is safety and security and the policies that have to do with handling cash for our employees. It doesn't matter what the cash is for. And as long as it's a common knowledge, you guys might know, because you're here all the time, what kind of cash we're getting. But some guy that's desperate won't know that. Some guy that's following somebody out of here with a money bag in their hand going to the bank may think she has $1,000 in that bag and mug her and beat her up and kill her over $2 because she's going to the bank. It's a matter of safety. And it's a matter of policy for our employees. It's not about what we're paying for. You guys are getting lost in what we're paying for here. It's about a no cash policy to handle for safety purposes. At least that's the way I'm looking at it.
Yeah. Ray, do you want to make a motion?
I've been trying.
Yeah, please do, Ray. I'm sorry.
I'd like to make a motion that we proceed with option 3, which is eliminate all cash collection at the district, implement credit card options, and implement online bill pay features. And I want to make sure that they have they get paid by electronic check, but that the district does not absorb the costs for the credit cards.
I'll second that.
That all that information will come back as part of the transaction agreements with the bank.
Okay. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Are you on, Rick, as the general manager's spot? Gerald's on.
I am.
I guess. I'm looking at your company.
Well, first, just let me.
Sorry.
Am I up?
Yep.
All right.
My fault.
It's okay. Yes.
Usually is.
Or you don't need
to. Do you want me to use it?
Nah, yeah, it won't get recorded if you don't, Gerald. I think you ought to use it. Just to make sure that everybody hears everything that's said. That's important.
Testing.
Thank you.
First, let me say Merry Christmas to all of you guys, because I'll probably not get the chance to do that, because I don't think you have another meeting, right, until after the first of the year?
Roger that. Thank you. Same to you.
And hope you all have a great holiday. I intend to. So, some of you were here, and last time I had a conversation of what I was in discussing how I do my reporting, and one of the things that I brought up was, because things happen, let's say in October, and it isn't until December that something gets reported or followed up on it, it may not get reported in like a November report. And one of the things I'm thinking about doing and how I report here is change that up a little bit. So when I'm reporting to you, I might report about something that happened specifically just for that month. That kind of keeps things a little more current, because if it happens, if I'm reporting in November and here it is in December, and I got great news to tell you in December, I might want to go ahead and share that with you. So I might change that a little bit on the future. So, talking about permit violations first, there were no wastewater permit limit violations in November. There were no water violations or excursions, and there were no sanitary sewer events that occurred in November. However, last October, when I gave my report, or November, when I gave my report for October, I said there were no permit violations that occurred in October. Well, at the time, that was true. So now I'm going to talk about a violation that occurred in October, in December, for my November report.
Okay.
Y'all with me on that? So what had happened is we had a some high NTUs, and an NTU is the turbidity of wastewater. And when you go back and look at one of the permit limits, it's called a 7-day median. And the state has required us to go back and look for every day that a sample was collected. That's a day that is counted. And if you have one day and then you don't collect a sample for 10 days and then you collect another one, that next date is your second day, and you have to go back until you get 7 of those. Okay? So in looking in October, you have to go all the way back into September to see this information. Well, in September, we had a lot of high NTUs during a period where we lost 2 return sludge pump primes on the same day. And when that occurs, the solids increase and can overflow into the effluent, and that's what happened. And so I'm trying to report now that that occurred in October. We have not received the notice of violation for this yet. So you'll see where I show, and at my next slide, that it shows non-reported. That just simply means that I know there's a violation, I anticipate getting a notice of violation, but they haven't issued it yet for that month. There's a quiz afterwards. So in operations, we had 17,000 hours so far of accident-free and incident-free operations. There were, that is significant, there were 51 samples collected for the month of November for triggered sampling. And triggered sampling is when the NTU goes up. And you'll see that I put 18 rain and 14 algae. There were 2 particular events that occurred. There was a period of rain. When it rains, the NTU goes up, the turbidity goes up. If after an hour that sample has exceeded 10, then you have to collect a sample within the next 60 minutes. And that occurred 18 times in that period that we had to do that. Now, I can tell you that I called the state and spoke to them, and they actually dismissed those. So I didn't have to take them in. So that was good. on an algae event, we had this algae that started to grow out in the clarifiers. I haven't seen it before in the 18 months I've been there. I've seen them red, but I've never seen them green. And it just turned green, and for 2 days, we had this green algae that was growing in this water. Well, I think it was an algae. And I called to talk to the state about it, and they said, well, don't take a sample every hour. Take a sample every 2 hours, and don't take anything after 4 o'clock. So again, it's the relationship that we've developed with the state and the regional board has allowed us to work cooperatively with them in terms of sampling and the requirements. We had 18 call outs. These are calls that we get usually by the SCADA phone system. And most of those were for, again, high NTU, after hours, or a process condition that was outside of a range. There were no brown water calls. We treated 56.52 million gallons of wastewater. There's the notice of violation for October, not reported, that I told you about. Okay. The ESMR, we've submitted our second one. We haven't had anything back yet for it in terms of being successful. I am 100% sure that it will be, as the first one was. And we had a recent inspection in December from the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and it went very well. And one of the comments that was made during that inspection was that there was a significant improvement over the last 2 years worth of inspections from them, and I take that personally and professionally as a job well done. In the collection system, the town called or had a company come in and change out 4 of the ARVs. These are air relief valves on the on the highway there, and then we went back out and did the PMs on these, which is hook up to them, flush them out. And then we cleaned 4,846 feet. Richmond is a town that we have a project at. They come out and support us as well. For the water treatment, there were 72 million gallons supplied to residents. That's the combination of both facilities, Newport and Willow Lake. We did 203 preventive maintenance, corrective maintenance tasks, which accumulated to 117 hours. I put in there, we hired Tech 3 Matt Fiedler. Matt was an option that we looked at to bring on and not necessarily be part of Discovery Bay at this time, but to support us for now. And so we did that with Lori Gabriel, as you know. We brought her on and hired her, and I kept her around, so, because she's a great help. But Matt's been doing a very good job. He has a electrical background, IC background, instrument and instrumentation and control. And we've kind of thrown him in there as part of the maintenance specific tasks. He does not have a license to operate, so I'm working the heck out of him and going through the pumps and changing out belts and come over here, I want to show you this and let's work on this kind of a thing. So we're real excited to have him, and you'll see him around. Matt Fiedler is his name. Now you'll see in there it says rebate with a big smiley face. Well, I don't know how much that is. What had happened was, when we code in numbers, we code them in as either 1,000s or 1,001. If it's a 1,001, these are belts and hoses and oils and things that would go for the plant, parts for the facilities, for upkeep. A 1,000 would be like my fuel, for example. Those are things we pay for. Laboratory expenses we pay for, safety supplies. There was a few that got entered incorrectly, and so we think there's somewhere around $3,000 there that would be rebated back to the town, but probably more like just would balance out what we spend in December.
Joe, was that through an audit process that you came across that, or through an updated program, or how did you, why wouldn't I want you to go back and check October, August, and September also to make sure that we didn't get rebates for those months?
There's a process that you go through each month.
An audit process?
It's a validation process, okay, that you go through. My eyes are on it, Stacy's eyes and Jennifer's, and okay, then the people back in Indianapolis and all those folks, and we all look through, and this happened to come up, and we saw it for this month, so. Okay. Rest assured, I don't owe you any money from the previous months. Okay?
Is that the conclusion to your report?
Yeah, it is the conclusion of this report, but I'll be more than happy to entertain and answer any questions.
Any questions from you guys?
No. I like questions, guys.
I know you do. I know you do.
It's pretty self-explanatory.
The upgrade on plant one with regards to the SCADA system, do you have any idea what we're talking about in cost on something like that? To get that up to be running as the way plant two is?
There were bids generated, costs developed in a report provided to Virgil and the town here. I don't recall what that was. It is a significant amount, and I wouldn't want to say without having that document to reference.
What's the story with our internet service, and how come we're still at a point where you guys can't? I mean, this has been going on for a year.
Yeah, and it's real difficult to do business when you don't have internet.
I'm baffled by that in today's world. I mean, we have air cards and everything else. What's the issue?
Well, there's a little bit more to it. What we had was an okay system, and it worked just fine. At some time, about 3 months ago, there was this slowing of the internet, which really creates havoc for us because a lot of our programs are web-based. We have to go online to pay our bills, we go online to enter our data, we go online to generate reports. For some reason, that quit occurring, and we spoke with Virgil and Joe Minerick, who is an ISP, the provider, and they came out and changed the antennas and put new antennas on, and that didn't work. Realigned it, that didn't work, and they concluded that, gee, there must be someone out there pirating some of this bandwidth, some of this band coming through. And so the option was, why don't we just stick another antenna, shoot over to that, go around it hopefully, and then maybe we'll get back in up to speed. That was an option. The other option was, well, hey, AT&T's got it right there at the golf course, let's just drag a wire in, we'll take care of that, shoot it across radio to plant two, and that'll work. Well, neither one of those options have been moved on, although they're there, that I know of. Now, I know that Virgil has picked, I think, the AT&T option and said, yeah, that looks like the way we ought to go. But as far as where we're at on that, I don't know.
Rick, do you have any comments on that?
Yeah, there's no, because of the proximity of the Plant 2 at the east end of town, there's no hardwire infrastructure there. It's all radio waves. So everything comes by radio. About 3 months ago, Gerald's right, we started having some interference, and we've been working with the ISP provider, and about a week or so ago, I signed off on a invoice, if you will, purchase order to investigate what Gerald's stating, which is to add another antenna and see if that will work, and then if that works, we'll implement and roll that out. So the difficulty is no, it's not hardwired, and the cellular and cell reception there isn't all that great.
Well, but can it be handled from a? And I'm not an internet guy, but you would think that directly across the street from Plant 2 are people that have Comcast internet, or AT&T or SBC or whatever. I mean, it's not like that's remote. And then can't we shoot it over by wireless?
What we're looking at doing there is just dragging a line across using the existing power poles and some poles that are already out there and dragging a line across at that point, bringing it across. So it's a work in progress. It's a high priority. It's taking place. It's been extremely frustrating.
Enough said. Thank you, Gerald. Appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
Any questions from the public? My apologies. I was still thinking about another problem.
Just offer the suggestion of the alternative, Rick, and that'd be we use WiMAX at my office in Santa Clara, and it's COVAB is the provider, so it's a wireless option. We just have a little pizza dish antenna up on top of the roof, and it's one, well, you pick the speed, but our rate is $100 a month for one, two, up and down. It's SDL equivalent, so just an option for you. It's not cell-based, it's a little more fixed, pipe-based. And it's guaranteed bandwidth.
Send me an email with that information, if you would. Thank you.
It's kind of a HughesNet type thing?
No, it's WiMAX is a particular wireless technology. It's not, satellite has a lot of latency. You don't want to go that way.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Gerald. Any other questions for Gerald? Thank you. Rick.
I have just two quick items. For the holidays, the district offices will be closed on Friday the 24th and Monday the 27th, and again on New Year's Eve because that's on a New Year's is on a Saturday, Christmas on a Saturday, so we will be closed those days for those holidays. The second item I have is more problematic, and that is, as you are aware, we scheduled a special meeting this evening. We have the closed session item on that. Once we found out we didn't have the bigger problem, if you will, associated with that, with SDRMA, we do need to adopt a resolution that's on their form. And we didn't have it in time for today's meeting to do that because we just got it this morning. And so we couldn't do a subsequent need after conversations with Dan this morning because it's not required by tomorrow, but it's required by next Wednesday. So I would like to call a special meeting next Monday or Tuesday or tomorrow. Well, I can't do it tomorrow, but next Monday or Tuesday, preferably, to adopt two resolutions that are required by SDRMA. It would be a perfunctory, if you will, action. It's we adopted a resolution when the board approved the program, but they didn't provide us with their resolution that we have to adopt until this morning. So I was a little frustrated with that. So if we can see if that will work for the board, I would greatly appreciate it.
Tuesday would go for me.
Tuesday won't work for me. Perfect. I'm in Sacramento.
No, Tuesday's not no go for me.
Monday won't work.
How much time do we need on Monday?
5 minutes. 10 minutes. Five. I mean, literally, it's a one item.
So yeah, bike take off.
I'll make Monday work.
What time? 7.
You can do it any time of the day. It doesn't. We just need to notify it.
It'd have to be an evening, like 7.
7's fine.
7's good.
Okay.
Well, does that work for you?
It's like kickoff.
No, it's not. It's 5. It's kickoff. It's halftime. 7 o'clock on Monday then for a special meeting.
Yes, and it will be a very, very brief meeting.
Girl, would you sign us reminders?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and I will get that agenda and everything out to you. By Friday, by a regular schedule on Friday. And it will also be posted to the website.
Anything else?
Thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Anything else, Rick?
I'm sorry, no.
You're on, Dan.
Thank you, Chairman, board members, public. First of all, please excuse me if I cough. I'm getting over a cold, and the more I talk, it kind of rattles and loosens things up, so please bear with me. Prior to my colleague passing on, he was directed by staff to report back to the board a response to a letter from the county controller raising the issue, or rather, coming to the conclusion that the formation of the district that included the MAC responsibilities that were imposed by LAFCO and then later ratified by the county was done without authority of either body. By way of a review, approximately 2 years, the same issue was brought to the district's board of directors by one of my former colleagues, who had looked at the issue and had come to the conclusion that he didn't think under the CSD law or LAFCO law at that time that either body had the ability to impose that condition. However, in 2008, he also pointed out the validating statutes that the state does on a regular basis every year provided the authority necessary for those decisions to become binding and enforceable. In the report that my former colleague, Mr. McGrew, had submitted, he came to a different conclusion on the first issue on authority. By way of background, Mr. McGrew had been a special counsel and recognized throughout the state of California as an expert on LAFCO law for over 35 years. And as you can see in Mr. McGrew's report, he points out that there is a provision in the LAFCO law by section that gives it broad authority to provide conditions or requirements on any action that is taken, and that would include the formation of a special district such as a community services district. During that process, the county would have had an opportunity to object to it. They did not. In fact, they ratified it at a later date. So Mr. McGrew had come to the conclusion that LAFCO law did give them authority to impose that condition, which was the MAC responsibilities on this CSD. But he goes on, and he concurs with Mr. Stovall in concluding that even if they did not, the validating statutes do provide that cover. Now let me read you the language of the validating statutes. First of all, a validating statute is basically a coverall that the state does at the end of the fiscal year, in which, in case somebody didn't technically follow something, they pass a law that says, if we could have given authority to do that, then we're validating the act. Anybody who doesn't like it would have a short period of time, 6 months, in which to bring an action to challenge that act. And if nobody did, then in essence the legislature was basically saying, well, then everybody was happy with it. This is what the validating statute says in part. This act shall operate to supply legislative authorization as may be necessary to authorize, confirm, and validate any acts or proceedings heretofore taken pursuant to authority the legislature could have supplied or provided for in law under which those acts or proceedings were taken. What this means is if something was done and the legislature could have passed a law giving the right to that, then they could have done that. And then they validate that act. The best example that the state could have passed a law to do that is that they did it in 2005 when they amended the CSD law. And interestingly enough, when you look at the CSD law, the section that was added, in section 61003, subpart F, it expressly provides that any approval or determination, including, but not limited to, terms and conditions made with respect to a district by a local agency formation commission, that's a LAFCO, prior to January 1st of 2006, shall remain in existence. I believe that what happened and what spawned this law was LAFCO in several instances had granted municipal advisory authority to the latent powers of a CSD when they created it. The legislative analysis analyst looked at this and began being confused and saying, well, the CSD law doesn't provide for that. And I think what they did was they essentially said, well, it's happening, let's just codify it. So I think in the response to Mr. Ibarra, is that his analysis does not take into consideration the validating statute. And when you look at the validating statute to understand the laws, it was Mr. Stovall's opinion, it was Mr. McGrew's opinion, and it's my professional opinion that this district was formed and validly has municipal advisory responsibilities as set forth in its governing documents. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Council. Any questions?
No.
Ray? Mark? I do want to clarify something for my own benefit. I did have the opportunity to read through this document earlier this afternoon just so I'd be familiar with it. And it's my understanding then that Mr. McGrew, in his summation, in fact, is saying that validation clause aside, we would still have these latent powers based on what had occurred between the LAFCO, the board of directors, and the changing the CSD code. But even on top of that, the validation clause covers it again. Is that correct?
That's correct. Mr. McGrew had opined, and I agree with his analysis, that under the LAFCO laws, the provisions are very broad. When you look at its language, it says any other conditions. And his basis of his analysis was that when the CSD was formed, it had to go through the LAFCO process with the county. And at that stage, it had the ability to place that burden on the district as part of its one of its powers. And even if it didn't have that authority, the validating statutes provided that authority after the district was created.
And likewise, the change in the CSD law in 2005 doesn't eliminate the authority that was given per LAFCO, but validates it because it's actually saying, hey, this should have been done prior, rather than saying what happened prior to 2005 is illegal. What they're actually doing is validating what happened prior to 2005. Is that correct?
That is one way to look at it. What they were doing...
Well, is that accurate, though? That's what I'm looking at. I just want to know, is that a proper way to look at it?
I have not studied the legislative intent in the adoption of the amendments to the CSD law in 2005, okay. So I cannot opine on that. But what is very clear on the express language of subsection F is that they were not disturbing any decisions that LAFCO had made. That's why I suspect that they saw this happening, LAFCO was doing it, and then somebody in the legislative analysis department had concluded that it would be a good idea to just codify that in the CSD law since it was happening anyway.
Thank you. Then, rather than try to interpret it, that's exactly what it's saying. Okay, I understand. Anything? Did you have something, Ray?
Yeah, I think they just grandfathered it in.
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree. Any other comments from the board? Comments from the public? Mr. Dorn.
Although I may not agree with that, I don't think that's the premise of the formation documents in itself. County Council has written some notes, and some handwritten notes out there from County Council that addresses it as well. I don't think the formation of the CSD or the Discovery Bay MAC is really the issue. In LAFCO's language and the county's language, it didn't address, and when they formed the CSD, they never put a vehicle in for funding the AC functions, which every other CSD has done. So that's what's missing. That's the golden egg here. So I don't think the intent, and by the way, my understanding of the Ultravirus Act or whatever else we want to call it is a little different than that. So if it's a technical piece in terms of language that was missed and or specific spelling and stuff, but it can't make an illegal action legal. That's very specific. That's one of the things that you may not have addressed in that. And I don't think that's the issue. I don't think it's whether we're legal or not. I think it's about AC functions and having the money to do the AC functions. And I think that Mr. Stovall did a great job, along with County Council, describing what we should have done as a town to put those, whether we mirror the Diablo CSD or not. I don't know if that's the case. I'm not the expert there. But I'm saying that we should, as a town, say, we've been fighting for 2 or 3 years about what we have jurisdictions over and not. It could have been resolved by one or two simple things. Making the CSD have a funding event or a vehicle for funding for the AC duties. Mr. Stovall's memo was probably the best, along with County Council, which is public record, that addresses that very clearly. And Mr. Stovall, on 6 different occasions, has advised Discovery Bay Board to do something. What's happened is nothing. So we keep addressing it, and I think that somewhere, we as a town or people say, okay, we need to fund it, and I'm not sure that your cell tower will do that. I don't know. I don't know that. If that's the case, that should be it. But that way you can have a clearly defined roles and jurisdictions, which all other CSDs in the state of California have. Ours are not. If you get it from LAFCO, we have water, power, sewer, and landscaping. That's all we have jurisdictions with. We have AC functions that don't have funding for the rest.
Other comments?
What are AC functions? Sorry.
Advisory.
Council.
Advisory council. Basically what a MAC does, Municipal Advisory Council. I don't know where we're I don't know how much I want to delve into the funding of the issue, because I don't have the history here. I have a very simplistic viewpoint of it, and that is that the Board of Supervisors comes in here every year and they tell us that they're funding our advisory council duties, and they give us money to do that. How that becomes our responsibility to give that money back and say, oh, no, you're not allowed to give us that money. You take it back. I'm confused as to why that's our responsibility. Is that our responsibility, Council?
No, it's not. In fact, when you look at the memorandum, the lengthy memorandum that the auditor controller put together, he was struggling with explaining how that happened and ultimately got to the portion of his suggestion, which is item number 6, which is basically to dissolve your MAC functions and then create the create a new Discovery Bay MAC and then have your board act as its members. But you have no obligation if somebody comes and gives you money to say, oh, no, you shouldn't give it to us, take it back.
Right.
Well, I believe the crux of it falls on if I think what it means basically is that we haven't budgetly or accounted for in our accounting what functions we've done that were MAC related and showed a separate stream of data. Okay, so I think we've set the groundwork to make that happen with this general fund that we set up. Now we can do a couple of things. Number one, we've thought the cell tower thing, that's money that we could use, or we could actually, the district could loan itself money and put some money into that fund to be used as a MAC if we choose, if that's what we want to do. And we can, at some point, also levy, I don't know if I'm using the right term, but we have the authority to, and it's not a Prop 218, but we could say $5 a household and collect dollars every year so that we had money in the town to do the MAC. And probably at some point we probably should address that, I would think.
Again, I need to probably study this more and have more conversation with not only council, but with the Board of Supervisors Council or with the county council and find out a little bit more about if this is the wrong thing. If we're not supposed to get these funds, then why do they come in every year and give it to us?
Oh, I didn't say we shouldn't take those funds.
Okay.
No. We could take those funds, but those funds, somehow, one time they say they're there, and then they're less each year. Like, they used to be 3,000, now they're 2,000. So those funds, I don't think, are something you can count on. So I'm saying, going forward, set up a mechanism so that we stay in compliance and we have a stream to take care of this function.
And I have tried fairly hard to try to understand this, and I have to be real honest with you. I've had some extensive conversations about this. I've gotten some extensive literature about this, and I've read it, and I've tried to understand it. And I got to be honest with you, I don't see the turbidity to use a wastewater term. I don't see the muddying of the waters when the same organization that gave us the powers is giving us money to use those powers. And 1 minute, Mark.
Now, I think that one thing we have to understand is we live in a state that loves unfunded mandates, where they tell you to do something and then they don't tell you we're going to pay you for it. But I'm with Ray 100%. I think that we should right now start, not right this second, but start a dialogue on how we can figure out a way to pay for this, for the AC functions.
Not only that, I would suggest that at some point in time soon, we try to quantify what the cost of those functions are, because I don't think anybody here can tell me what it costs us to do our MAC duties. No. And so what are we really funding here? Did you have something you wanted to add, Mark?
Yeah, I do. I mean,
without
getting up?
No, you can get up, but just, I mean, without it going, I mean, you know, no, be brief, if you would.
Yeah. Look, I don't think the intent of the formation was wrong. I think everything was done. We did a lot of good things, making it from a MAC to a C, CSD, all those different things. But there was an error made, real simple error, and there's a lot of case law on that, because there's simple language that, you're right, you can enact not a levy. It's just we have to vote on it. We all put $5 in it to do that. But the clarity here is not so much about the funding of the AC duties. It's now the clarity of the jurisdictions that the CSD has. I think that's the bigger piece. What are your responsibilities? If you look at all the bylaws and most of the other CSDs in the state of California, it talks about the water, power, sewer, lands, you know, all the other things they have. And, you know, the airport and all the other stuff that we are involved in, we have teeth now. I don't think we've had teeth in the past. I'm not saying we've operated illegally. These are just my opinions. But now if we have the funding that's proper, all the arguments, all the dissension goes away. That's just my personal opinion.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you, Mark.
I have a question.
Did you have a question?
Yeah.
For Mark?
For legal.
No, not okay.
For Mark. It was explained to me that our advisory powers to the county are anything we do not have a direct authority over. We can act as an advisory. So we don't have authority over the school district. But we can write a letter to our supervisor advising on the situation that we are currently in. I think this is something that we have to discuss, not only for our board, but for the public, is what are our powers? What are, you know, what's our purview? And make it clear and have a workshop or something like that on the subject.
Municipal advisory committees, or MACs,
mm-hmm.
were really created as, you know, sources of hearing, you know, for the Board of Supervisors. They're stuck up in one, you know, within the county seat, and they want to have different, you want to have some kind of form. Now, obviously, one thing you could do is you could move your Board of Supervisors meetings around, but that's not practical. So they establish them. They effectively have no authority to do anything other than to gather information and then pass that along to the Board of Supervisors.
Exactly.
You are not a MAC. You just have the responsibilities of an advisory council.
Wherein the function is very similar to a MAC.
Well, yes.
Right.
But what causes the problems, and this gentleman, I think he does hit the point, is when LAFCO put this responsibility on, everybody was focusing on the responsibility, and nobody was stopping to think how it was going to be funded. A CSD has the ability to raise its own funds and treat this as one of its administrative obligations, because that's one of the powers you were given when you were created.
But it can't come from sewer water money.
Correct. Those are Prop 218 funds.
Right.
What the county has been doing over the years, it's had Keller Canyon funds that it decided to use as a source of paying for the costs incurred by MACs, and they chose to include you. Technically, if they wanted to, they probably could have said no. You're not a MAC.
Which they will be in the future.
Okay.
You're just an advisory council that's part of a CSD.
And does the same fallacy, or at least the perceived or the same situation occur that Mr. Dorn's referring to with regards to those funds not coming properly to us, occur also for Knightson and for Byron and the other MACs that get the same money that we do? Would they have the same issues with regards to receiving that money that we do?
I don't think the issue of receiving the money is the question. If there was a problem for the use of those funds as the county used them, that's the responsibility of the county.
And that's a different point. That's a different issue altogether. If the county's misusing the funds, that's something that the county, and that has nothing to do with Discovery Bay.
Nothing to do with Discovery Bay.
Right. And so that's not a subject matter that we need to discuss in these meetings. I fail to see how we're improperly funded. I don't get it. But anyway.
Like, real quick point is, you mentioned, President Graves, that they're giving us money and we're not asking for it. I think we are asking for it. I think we're turning in paperwork. I think we're even referring to ourselves as the DB MAC in some of the paperwork. And in some cases, the paperwork is being filled out by the supervisor's office without us, but in some cases we're contributing to it. So it's not just something falling from the sky.
It's actually, we're being asked to do that by the county. They're asking us to submit bills for our duties. Is that correct?
Yeah. Just as a point of clarification, when you looked at the bills, when you looked at the details, it was handwritten on them so that I think either when we sent it over, when it came through us, or when the county received it, It was just written as a DB MAC, just as a, so they knew.
Reference point.
Just as a reference point. I whether it was an AC or a MAC duty, I believe it was just exactly a reference point in that only.
Okay. Any more discussion? Mr. Mankin?
This is a little schizophrenic to me because in light of the Keller Canyon thing getting killed like a, you know, weak old fish, it's pretty safe to say that you're not going to see those funds going forward.
Has that been killed completely? Did I miss something?
Yes. Well, I believe the gentlemen are still kicking the very dead horse, but yeah, I would say it's pretty safe that that's not going to happen. Just having
wasn't Karen just here like 2 months ago telling us that we got 2011 money for Keller Canyon funds?
That's doled out in August. Safe to say next August you probably won't get
Karen won't be here again giving us money, is that what you're talking?
I don't think Santa Claus is showing.
I know that this has been a point, and I read the lengthy report that came from
thank you.
Whatever it was. And
I was going to call it the Magna Carta, but I don't think Mr. Barr is
I see that it's not funded anymore. It seems to be in a negative balance, so I wasn't sure how they were going to deal with that. But it's really not any of my concern here, other than the fact that I'm a county resident.
Well, the point was that you're talking about in the picture that is the district, it's a fairly small amount of money that you're even squabbling over. I believe what Ray is referring to is benefit assessment, and council could probably weigh in on that, but I think up to a certain level, assessment can be levied with a simple board action as opposed to a voter action.
You're correct.
After a certain dollar amount, then you got to go out to the voters. But unless you're talking a buck a parcel, which is $6,200, you're right there. You triple what you're getting from Keller Canyon.
Well, in 1 month, the tower brings in what we got for the whole year this year. So I'm seeing that we're going to be fairly self-sufficient. Funding's not going to be an issue. Going forward is what I'm hoping.
And I don't believe that, and I may be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that we have not received any Keller Canyon funds, submitted any reimbursements, invoices, and received anything from the county in approximately, you guys might know better than I do, but I believe it's been about a year and a half. It's been quite some time since we've actually received any money from the county.
Whose fault is that?
I don't think we were funded last year.
No, we were.
Okay.
If we were, then I'm not sure that they submitted any reimbursement requests.
Did you have something more, Bob? I'm sorry. We had kind of gone off and left you standing there.
Well, I was just kind of curious, because Ray was talking about going down the assessment path, and I don't know how far you guys were looking to build the fund, because as you mentioned, the $2,000 a month is a new general fund thing. If you go benefit assessment, that's kind of on top of that. At 10 bucks a parcel, you're 62.
Well, we're just talking theory.
I think that was more in principle and ability. Thank you. I am a little bit concerned that we are not properly accounting for our AC duties. And I think that I would like to see staff bring a proposal back to the board that says exactly how we're going to do that. And believe me, I'm not proposing separate meetings. I'm not proposing, there's a lot of options there, but I am proposing a certain, whether it be a random selection of meetings and finding it, it comes in spurts. You can have a developer come in here and ask us, and talk to us about a project, and we can spend three meetings discussing, a half an hour in each meeting discussing the pros and cons by the time the public weighs in on their opinions, and that's part of our AC duties, but then we won't do anything for a year or 2 years on something like that, depending on how scared off the developers get. But there are other things. The fire district, for instance, was an AC duty. So there are times when we're spending time on it may be an AC duty. It's not up to me to make that decision. I'm not positive. But I would like to see a recommendation on how we can better quantify our AC functions. And then as our general fund establishes itself, that we make sure we're not taking ratepayers' money to do AC functions, because then we're having an issue.
That's not a problem. We can bring that back.
Any other comments? Mr. Richardson.
I'm just confused about the timing of this. If you follow me with the dates, I'll try to make it clear as I've tried to figure it out. In 1997 and 98, the CSD for Discovery Bay was formed. In 1998, the third validating act occurred. In 2005, the law was changed. In 2008 and 2009, in two separate memos, Neumuller and Dursley says that that act back there in 1998 was illegal. Now, at that time, they knew about the 2005 law change. They knew about the validating act, but it wasn't until 2010 and the auditor controller's report that Neumuller and Beardsley suddenly changed their opinion on this, and the validating act took care of it. And I don't understand that. Thanks.
If I could briefly respond,
looking to
Mr. Stovall's letter that he'd done in 2008, he was very clear that he did not believe that LAFCO or CSD law gave the authority, but he's very clear that the Validating Act did.
So it's not accurate to say that he said it was illegal?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Okay, I think we've treated that like the Keller Candy Crunch. We beat that dead horse. I would like to see it cleaned up, if we could bring it and do that and just take us out of this mire. Again, I have to claim that I don't. I'm new to the game when it comes to this. This has been going on. Mr. Richardson's got much more history on this than I do. I was reading through several pages today of some history on that. And I would like to move forward.
Very funny, Brian.
I would like to move forward without dwelling too much on the path. Let's move forward, get it cleaned up, and separate ourselves from whatever issues the Board of Supervisors may have, and make sure that we maintain the Advisory Council. I think it's important to our constituents that we maintain those duties so they have a place to come locally to bring, and we don't always agree on how to move those facts forward, I'll give you that, but they need an instrument here, right here in Discovery Bay, to bring their concerns.
We can do that probably, if not the second meeting in January, definitely by the first meeting in February. It just depends on our timing to meet with some folks in the county, but I think that's probably a reasonable time frame.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
I got to get this straight before I leave here, but are you going to make a list of the duties that are AC duties and the costs? Is it going to be in some kind of form that the public is going to have access to? Or do you understand what the AC duties are?
It will be explained. I don't know what that, I haven't thought about how it's going to
work. Let me address that.
Okay.
There will be a clarification on what the AC duties are, so we're aware of them as well.
Yeah, that's
as you.
Okay. Yeah.
There will not be an inventory or a laundry list with a price next
no.
to each duty.
But I think
it would be great to have staff and council get together and decide what we are allowed to do, or at least, and there may be an et cetera at the end of it, because we may not catch them all, but let's get an idea of what we're talking about here, and then it's going to make it easier for staff to quantify it when it comes to costs and all that other kind of thing, and I think that's important to do.
I think it's really important that you do the explanation so the public knows what's MAC, what's the AC duties, and what's the Discovery Bay Services.
I'm right there with you.
So, thank you.
Real quick.
Kevin, I apologize. I think that the county has spent a lot of time. I know that Mary did the MAC normalization program. And if you take a look at what she and the group did for the Diablo CSD/MAC, which is a hybrid, it was pretty clear. And it gives you probably more autonomy than what has been used in the past. We need the autonomy for the town. But the clarity in terms of what goes what buckets, that's going to be your general manager or somebody else. So I don't want to
remove that with semantics in terms of understanding what goes in what bucket. The reality is, what are we responsible for? And don't, I wouldn't say the board needs to do a lot more work. Just look at what has already been done for the Diablo CSD. Now, there's one caveat. They now have to adhere to the BGO. And I don't know if that's harmful to us at all. Nobody's explained to me why it would be.
Well, we're not a MAC, so we don't have to apply the BGO.
Yes, they do. The MAC.
We're not a MAC.
Well, if you mirror them, then you will have to have some involvement with the BGO, which I don't know if that's harmful.
Well, I'm not sure that we do, but I'm sure we can get counsel to address that.
But it also gives you a revenue opportunity from the Board of Supervisors outside the Keller Canyon funds. Now, Keller Canyon funds, a different conversation, a later time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I'm finished with this. Is everybody else finished with this? Council, I'm sorry, it's still your floor. Are you?
I was finished. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dan, for your explanations. I appreciate it. Where are we, folks?
Correspondence.
Correspondence is there. Public records requests are there. Future agenda items.
I have none other than standard operating business.
Yeah, we're going to have some first of the year stuff to do. You and I'll get together and put that together. Anything other than that anybody would like to see on the agenda? Okay, I move for adjournment. Without a second.
Without a second.